Hi, this is Pam Brown.
I'm Ann Diver Stamness, and this is Chronologically Gifted, Conversations on Life After 50. This week, our program takes a look at how feminist theory and practice for people over 50 have changed over the past few decades.
Our guest today is Dr. Vali Kalei-Kanuha, who is on the phone with us from Seattle, where she is an assistant dean in the Office of Field Education at the University of Washington School of Social Work. For the past 40 years, she has been an activist, therapist, consultant, and researcher, focusing on intimate, partner, and sexual violence, and the intersection of race, gender, and sexuality. Welcome to the program, Vali.
Thank you. I'm so honored to be here.
What changes have you seen in feminism over the last decades?
I think for many of us who kind of came up in the 60s and 70s, you know, we've been able to kind of look forward and backward with, I think, a different kind of lens. For myself, as a lesbian of color and somebody who came of age in the 70s and also came of age as a queer person in that time, I think what's mainly changed are a couple different things. I think there's been a much more conservatizing influence in a lot of theory building and public policy, even in activism, I would say. I think we're in a really exciting time, unfortunately, right now, where we're seeing a resurgence of all kinds of activism. But this has been an exception, I would say, over the last 20, 30 years. So I think a couple things that I've seen. One is only, I would say, in the last, 3 months, we've seen a return to activism that I think for many of us, we grew up in a period of activism with the anti-war movement, civil rights, disability rights, HIV, the battered women's movement. That's one. I think the second thing is just this tremendous thinking, critical thinking, and out-of-the-box thinking that's really been coming from primarily young lesbians and queer people of color, primarily queer women of color, I have to say. And that, I think, is very, very exciting because it has put into practice some of the things that have been missing traditionally over probably the beginning of what we called feminist and the women's movement until even today. Just not a really clear, well-articulated, inclusive, diverse, radical voice that really represents in action and application what people call intersectionality.
One of your observations early on was how homophobia from the beginning of the women's movement suppressed lesbians' contributions, minimizing their voices. Can you share how this has changed?
Well, you know, I'm among, I think, not that large a group, but I think there is a very solid group of activists, queer people of color, primarily lesbians of color and a lot of some of us old-timers, queer people of color, who have really been critical about the whole rights movement and the rights agenda that's been put forward by the LGBTQ movement. And again, I would call this part of the conservatizing influence of what's happened in the last 20, 30 years, I would say. You know, one of the things that many of us criticized as we were coming up in the 60s and 70s about feminism is that, of course, it was crafted primarily because it was something that grew from a more academic, theoretical, and privileged place. So even around the kitchen tables in places where consciousness-raising groups were occurring, these were opportunities that were really only afforded to women with some kind of comfort and privilege because working class women, poor women, immigrant women, native women did not have the time to sit around theorizing about rights. And so I think that the growth of the modern day feminist and women's movement was a growth that came from privilege. Many of the early calls of equal pay for equal work, more opportunities of all kinds for women in terms of flexibility of roles and those kinds of things were actually roles and functions and ways of life that working class women, poor women, immigrant women, native women, they did all of those things. So there was no need to ask for those things because poor women have always juggled multiple functions, including unpaid motherhood, but also working outside the home, raising their children and trying to go to school and getting training for different jobs. And so these were issues of survival. These were not issues of rights. These were issues of survival. And so I think the modern day women's movement that was able to articulate some of these gaps in equity and equality could only come from a place of privilege. The reason I think it was very difficult to bring a lot of women of color, poor women, immigrant women, into the early women's movement and feminist movement is it didn't really speak to us. because I'm just going to be frank, it sounded to many of us like it was whining. We had to live. We had to eat. We had to take care of our children. We had to work. And so I think that's changed over the years. I don't think it's that much better, but I think the opportunities and the discourse has changed, and I think that's been a good thing because I think there are more women across all classes and identities that are engaged in discourse, civil life and social life, and so I think we're seeing more representation of diverse groups of women.
Valli, much of your past and current work is devoted to domestic violence. How has feminism continued to change the rhetoric and understanding of domestic violence?
I would say that what has remained constant from the beginning of the anti-violence movement in the actually late 50s all the way up to now has been that the leadership, the advocacy, the activism has stayed very grounded and very centered and very much led by the women's movement and by feminism and by a close and deep-rooted understanding of misogyny and patriarchy. And so while we have more nuanced and more critical and more complex analyses of how it is that violence against women can be not only so pervasive, but that it crosses so many borders of identities, of nation, of the socioeconomic class, of sexualities and genders, these analyses are not coming from either people of color movements, it's not coming from labor, it's not coming from the queer movement, it's really coming from feminist activists who have been involved and understand how violence against women is probably, I would say, the strongest tool of misogyny is violence against women. And so that can actually only come from activists and organizers and policymakers who are grounded deeply in an understanding of misogyny and patriarchy. So I would say that the thing that I'm most proud about is that the agenda to end violence against women at the local, the national, and the international level is primarily being driven by women who are not afraid, many of us, not afraid to call ourselves feminists still.
Valli, this has been such a wonderfully informative interview, and we want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
So glad to be part of your series, and best wishes.
That's all the time we have for today's show. Annie is our editor and engineer.
Tune in next Thursday to Chronologically Gifted, Conversations on Life After 50. For more information, past shows, and the links to our podcasts, email, and Facebook group, go to our website at chronologicallygifted.org.
I'm Pam.
And I'm Annie. Thanks so much for listening.
We'll be here next week and hope you will be too.